Welcome to the Living Life on Purpose podcast with your host, Michael Mukunda Chandra Cohan, the founder of YourWellnessYogi.com and the Living Life on Purpose community. The Living Life on Purpose podcast is a show dedicated to inspiring people to achieve their goals and live their dreams to the highest potential. Life is short. Learn to live it on purpose. Inside all of us is a powerful spark of the divine, and yet as life's challenges grind and wear us down, many of us forget that inner spark. However, that spark never leaves us, and if we stray too far from it, we will be unhappy in our life. At Your Wellness Yogi and the Living Life on Purpose community, we are dedicated to helping you discover that inner spark in life. We offer a variety of life coaching packages that meet your needs and budget. We have group coaching, monthly mindfulness mastermind calls, and one-to-one coaching. Get started today and take advantage of our two free personal one-to-one coaching conversations by taking the Circle of Life quiz, a free life assessment tool that helps you reveal the big picture of your true dreams and paves the road for real personalized action plan to take control of your life. Visit yourwellnessyogi.com/life. Before we get started, I wanted to ask you a favor, to write us an honest review of our podcast. By writing us a review, you will help raise our profile so more people can find us on iTunes. Visit yourwellnessyogi.com/podcast and click on subscribe to open up in iTunes and write us a review. You can also write us a review on your device as you listen to the show by opening up the podcast app. Thank you and enjoy this week's episode, and I appreciate you listening. Welcome to another full-length episode of the Living Life on Purpose show with our guest, Hillary, who is a leadership strategist, award-winning author, entrepreneur, and a yoga teacher. Her two leadership guidebooks, Awake Leadership, A System for Learning and Clarity and Creativity, and Awake Ethics, A System for Aligning Your Actions with Your Core Intentions, take both a practical and personal approach. Today, we talk about yoga in the workplace, yoga in leadership and spirituality, and how to be ethical and successful in all areas of life. Now, let's get on with this amazing episode. Hillary, thank you for being a guest on the Living Life on Purpose show. I do appreciate you being here. And before we get started with our interview, I ask everybody the same question. And I want to know what your definition of living life on purpose is.
That's a great question, Michael. I'm so excited to be here today. Thanks for having me on. So I would say living on purpose to me really feels like living with an intention. And intention is a big word in the yoga world, as you probably know. But for people that aren't as familiar with really what living with intention means having a direction for your life and an intended impact that you hope to have on the world. So instead of setting a goal, like a very tangible goal, like I'm going to be a senior vice president by the time I'm 40, or I am going to build the next most popular car after Tesla or whatever it is. Living with intention means more having an intended impact for your life. Like I'm going to improve people's mental health, or I'm going to help leaders gain the right skills to succeed in their work. So having an intended impact and really, yeah, that intention for your life is living on purpose to me, because you wake up each day with an idea in mind of really the direction and the type of actions you want to take and the impact you want to have on others in the world.
Well, thank you for sharing. And I'm really excited for this conversation we're going to have today. And I say conversation and not interview, because this is a conversation. And the reason why I'm excited is because we're going to discuss yoga as a leadership practice, as a spirituality and how to be a successful team entrepreneur, yoga individual. But at the same time, I'm going to be, you know, very straightforward and put my cards on the table. At this present moment in my life, because I've been teaching yoga for 10 years and I've been practicing yoga since the 90s, I am very skeptical these days with the yoga community because it's gone from this spiritual practice of introspection, mindfulness, and an awakening of the mind and body to connect to the soul to a physical practice to get a good workout in. And what I'm excited about is how you're going to bring yoga into the world of leadership and what that means.
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about that with you today, Michael. Yeah, they're all very timely topics. And actually, everything you said really resonates with some of what I feel about the yoga world today, especially as in the Western world and in the US, yoga really becomes a huge, you know, multi-billion dollar industry. So what does that mean for the real, you know, spiritual side and personal growth aspect of what yoga is really meant for?
As a life coach, my foundation, the reason why I became a life coach is because when I was teaching yoga, and I loved to teach yoga, and I was practicing yoga, and yoga was a very subculture population at the time. And everyone, for the most part, that practiced yoga were going to yoga studios, not the gym, for the purpose of awakening themselves to a higher consciousness, to awakening to become their best self, whatever that means. And over time, I've watched yoga move away from that to just, let's go into a place and work out for an hour and do a bunch of yoga poses and call it yoga. And I'm skeptical and very upset about that. And right now I'm kind of like, not really into my practice as much as I should. And so I want to know what you think yoga is as a spiritual practice. And does it need to be spiritual in order to call it yoga?
Yeah, that's another good question. So I'll go back and start, you know, with this answer of how I really found yoga, because I found yoga in a very non-spiritual way when I didn't even know that I was really looking for spiritual answers. I'm a millennial, so I was actually born in the 90s. And I first found yoga in about, it was almost 10 years ago now. I think it was early 2010 is when I found yoga. I was in college in engineering school, and I was very stressed out at an Ivy League school. As you know, you hear a lot of these kind of stories today, right? People in high stress schools or the corporate world that are sort of seeking the way out, and how do you find you know, inner peace really when you're so stressed and you're really looking for answers. So I was searching kind of everywhere without really being aware of it at the time because I didn't practice yoga. And I got a Groupon offer for 5 classes for $20 or something crazy like that at a power yoga studio in Center City, Philadelphia. And I was going to school right in West Philadelphia, just about a 20-minute walk from this yoga studio. And I happened to open that Groupon email that day. And for some reason, I was like, you know, I need to get off campus. This might be just what I need. I had never really done yoga before. I might have taken one or two classes, you know, a few years before that, you know, with a friend or something like that. But I decided to go for it. So I got the Groupon, and on Saturday morning, I was so happy to walk into Center City, get away from campus. And for some reason, the power yoga class just resonated with me. I was moving my body. I was in an environment where, yes, the teacher was talking about bigger life questions, you know, and focusing in on your body, letting go of certain things going on in your life. And just some of the, like, the small amount of yoga philosophy that I learned in just that one class, and even the power yoga class itself, which was more, you know, athletic and focused on poses and moving, really moved me. Obviously with the practice physically, but inside as well. And so I did the whole class pack. I kept going back every Saturday. And over time, I started going multiple times a week. And then eventually about 2 years later, I got my yoga training certification. So I've been teaching about almost 8 years now. I've been teaching yoga. but it doesn't really have to be a spiritual practice. I think a lot of people that are interested in practicing yoga might enter it as a way to, you know, get physically fit or do a physical practice. And I think the spiritual benefits of it emerge over time. I do think other people enter it as, you know, with a spiritual intention, if they learn about it that way. And if they are that self-aware or spiritually inclined in their culture, in their community, to be, you know, spiritually inclined. I think a lot of people in the West aren't so, you know, we're very results oriented. Spirituality isn't really an achievement or a way to progress in society or in your career necessarily, as most people know it. Now, I think they're very connected, actually. But a lot of people don't go into yoga in the West for spiritual reasons. But I think that might emerge later on for a lot of people. But what are your thoughts on it? I'm curious.
I think yoga, without the idea or the intention of awakening the body and the spirit to a higher consciousness, mm-hmm. just a form of gymnastics or stretching. Mm-hmm. And we as a community need to stop calling yoga, when it is this, let's come to a down dog and move our bodies, mm-hmm. yoga. We should mm-hmm. call it something else. And yeah. we should call yoga what it is. It is a union of the mind and the body to the soul. It's a mm-hmm. way to live a conscious life. It's not necessarily to be able to put your leg over your shoulder and bend your knees and lift up mm-hmm. into Ashavakasana or eight angle pose, but rather to connect to that higher sense of consciousness. That's what it means to be a yogi and to practice yoga. And I know a lot of people get really upset when I say this, but that's just the truth. Like, that's just the text. Now, you can come to yoga and you can go, you know what, I'm stressed out and I'm not really into yoga in terms of the spiritual practice. And that's okay. You're the student. It's mm-hmm. the teacher who is teaching yoga has to have that intention for the students mm-hmm. in order for them to have the choice to go down that road. Mm-hmm. And we as stewards of yoga have not held up to that standard as a yeah. group. We have had this mindset for the last 20 years. Oh, as long as yoga, we just want to spread yoga. So we don't care. So if that person over there is just teaching it as a fitness class, great. Any yoga is better than no yoga. And that's why we did that, because it was an unknown source. But now that it's become so mainstream, we have to ask ourselves what it means to practice yoga, not as the student, because students that come to yoga, they can be doing whatever they want. If a student walks into a yoga class and they're like, yeah, I just want to stretch and work out. Great. Stretch and work out. That's your business. But mm-hmm. you as the teacher who's saying that they are a yoga teacher should be following the principles of yoga from the philosophies of the texts of the Yoga Sutras, the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam, and all these texts that create this mindset to be better leaders in the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I do think it's up to the teacher. And I think that's one of the reasons I was able to go from, you know, this is a fun physical practice where I get away from campus and I move my body, to really realizing what the physical practice was doing for me besides just that physical workout or movement. It was actually the teachers helped facilitate that learning process with the philosophy they were teaching in class and with their guidance, facilitating that so that I could realize that really the physical movement and what I teach my students now is, we're so grateful for this physical practice, which allows us to move our body in order to still our mind and find peace and union within and realize our potential.
Hey, my friends, I'm really excited to announce our annual self-discovery coaching series is happening now. If you've been stuck for a while, it's time to make some changes and enjoy a breakthrough in your life. It's easy to be stuck in a rut. The same thinking, routines, habits, and actions
lead to the same mediocre results. Finding yourself, who you are, and what you want to be, it is the most important adventure a person can take in their life. But it has been seen many times that people often spend their entire lives not knowing who they are and what they want to be. In our 7-session, powerful self-discovery coaching series, you will gain a newfound knowledge about yourself to bring focus, clarity, and depth to your actions, habits, decision-making, visioning, and goal setting. You will learn to align your life, priorities, and actions with who you really are. We are now accepting new applicants. Are you ready for a breakthrough? Are you willing to make the necessary changes to attain the life you've always wanted? Take control of your life and improve your results. Now is the time. Signups are happening now. Information on our self-discovery coaching series can be found in our show notes or by visiting yourwellnessyogi.com. Thank you. And now let's get on with the show.
So I do think it's up to teachers to, you know, lead students down that path and really set that intention and help them realize as they're making their journey into a more dedicated, consistent yoga practice, really where the path is unfolding.
Agreed. And that's what, and for me, that's how, if we teach yoga from that standpoint of this is a conscious awakening and we teach from the tradition, we don't take the tradition and bring it to a new age concept. We take the tradition and apply it to modern life. Then it stays an effective practice. And I'm going to be the first to admit, I first started practicing yoga as a way for me to work off my hangover from the night before. I had no intentions of practicing yoga from a spiritual standpoint. Even for the first 10 years of my practice, I would go to class and my teacher would say, yoga is a spiritual practice. And I would go, yeah, whatever, dude. I'm exercising. Mm-hmm. I'm here to lose weight. I'm here to stay fit. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this chanting, whatever. I'm just going to get through it. And then I'm going to get to the good parts, the down dog, the handstands, the arm balances. Mm-hmm. But the teacher kept saying it was a spiritual practice. And the teacher was embodying it. And that teacher was a leader. And so what I want to ask you are there ways yoga fuels leadership?
Yes, I greatly believe that there is. And as I continued to practice yoga throughout school, and then I became a teacher, when I graduated from school, I became a leader. Well, first I was a team member, and then soon after, about a year or two later, I was a leader of a small team in the corporate world, in the world of retail and supply chain in Philadelphia. And what I found was that having that yoga practice that had evolved for about 5 years at that point was really, really instrumental, not just for lowering my stress level, you know, at work, which yoga really does help us to do and keep physically fit and healthy so we can be energetic at work. But it also helped me to find more clarity and focus every day. And I really found that people that I knew that practiced yoga and had a consistent practice really showed up to work with more clarity and focus, with that dedicated practice of showing up to the mat. And as you said, you know, uniting your physical with your mental and your spiritual, these people really showed up centered and were better decision makers, honestly. People that practice yoga, I really found that people I worked with, and I found myself a much better decision maker in my work and my life once I started practicing yoga. Another thing I found, just to mention one more, is that yoga helped me become a stronger leader, because on the mat, one thing we learn is having strength through challenge, right? Something as simple as learning a new pose or moving into a new variation. It really isn't about moving into some crazy pose, like you said, putting your foot behind your head or doing a handstand or something like that. But even making gradual progress, transformation over time, right? Into new variations, holding a pose longer, showing up to practice more consistently. All these things make us stronger as people that we can learn. And the way to learn that is by practicing it on the mat, practicing it through our yoga practice. But that also starts to reflect in our work ethic as well. And as leaders, when we're supporting a team of people, having to have one-on-one conversations with them, give them direction, support them through their challenging times, it's extra important that we're able to work through challenge ourselves in order to support our team members through challenge as well. So I think the capacity to handle challenge and really work through struggle and emerge stronger is something that we learn personally on the mat that really comes into play as at work as a leader as well.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because it brings me back to a memory. And I worked in corporate for 16 years before I decided to become a full-time yoga teacher and then eventually a life coach. Mm-hmm. And now I run a podcast. And when I first started my journey in corporate America, you got ahead in your job by outworking, outperforming, and killing the person next to you. Mm-hmm. And as I began to get more and more successful, and I went from a cubicle to a bigger cubicle, managing a small little team, to an office, a little bit bigger team, to an office with a window, a bigger team, to a corporate office with an admin assistant managing a department, the leadership concepts had to shift. And I don't know if it was because I was getting more into yoga or the corporate culture was slowly shifting and the work I was doing was in par with that. But leadership was more about not trying to outperform, outcompete the person around you, but rather to help the person that was on your same level. Mm-hmm. And help the people below you and to make the world around you better. And by doing that, you are more successful in life. Mm-hmm. And there was a shift. And I wonder if that is something that you're noticing in the leadership world, where that mindset of how we interact with the world, what we do with our work, and how can we make the world better as effective leaders is becoming more mainstream.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think a big difference, I mean, especially today in the corporate world, but I think that a lot of independent contributors or, you know, solo team members face, one of their challenges they face when they're moving, shifting from an independent contributor or team member position to becoming a leader of a team is that independent mindset you were talking about, like, you know, I'm out there for myself. I have to, you know, outperform other people. I have to, you know, be dedicated to my own work and achieve higher than other people to stand out or to get the promotion. When you become a leader of a team, and what I found, which was a really beautiful reflection of a lot of yoga philosophy, was that you have to learn as a leader to actually enjoy helping others at work, like you said, peers or people below you, especially your team members, and lifting them up and taking accountability and ownership of their actions as well, and really taking an invested interest in their development, not only because it just helps them and lifts them up and that's what you're responsible for, but because it helps the whole team, the individuals and the collective, to move forward. And in yoga philosophy, you know, with Dharma, and all of these, you know, the philosophy that we learn in yoga, it really is about realizing your own potential and doing that own personal development in order to progress as an individual, but really find your contribution that also advances the collective or humanity. You know, how do you fit into the greater humanity as an individual to lift the collective? So I think that, you know, sort of goal in yoga, or intention, if you want to say, that we have in yoga to be our best selves and reach our potential in order to, you know, help others as well, is really reflected in what new leaders are asked to do when they take responsibility for others on a team.
Mm. Yeah, it gets to be this, you know, this idea that we have to be conscientious of the people that work for us, because mm-hmm. their success results in my success. And if I make the people below me successful and I make the people above me successful, I become successful. And that's a new concept in this world. That's a that's a new idea. Mm-hmm. It's the same concept of like of understanding that what I do in my little corner of the world, how I live, how I work, and how I play has an effect on your corner of the world, however far away it is. And I have to be conscientious of that. And I have to be conscious of how I consume. And I have to be conscious of how I interact with people. And I have to be conscious on the work and the message I put out in this world, because it really does have an effect. And we are really starting to understand that for the first time ever.
Yeah, yeah. I really do think there's a shift from very, you know, individual kind of narrow-minded focus to a greater focus on the collective and the world, especially with climate change and all the, you know, political world issues that are happening around us. In my book, my second book called Awake Ethics, which is actually an interpretation of the yamas and niyamas for leaders, mainly in the corporate world, but leaders of all levels. That second book, Awake Ethics, I talk about how in the last chapter, how our impacts have an impact on all these different levels. And there's an exercise I go through to sort of assess your contributions at work and your impact and how it impacts yourself, how it impacts your team members, how it impacts your organization, and how it impacts the world. So I think people are taking a, and that's resonated with a lot of people that have read the book. They said, oh, wow, it's like expanding awareness, kind of like what we do in yoga, right? Starting with ourselves and our own practice on our mat, and then being able to expand our awareness to, you know, realms beyond just ourselves, and actually take care and care about our impacts beyond ourselves.
Yeah, it's really is a conscious shift, and you can see the pushback. You could see where the philosophies of yoga of, let's not be so greedy. Let's not harm others. Let's live truthfully. Let's be compassionate. Let's be content with what we have. Let's be clean in our food, in our diet. There is a pushback from other cultures in, you know, our community that are really feeling threatened by this consciousness. And I think it comes back to, in order for us to be, you know, effective leaders, do we have to be spiritual now? Is that where we're going?
Yeah, well, I believe, you know, spirituality and leadership, it definitely does feel like a contradiction, which is sort of what we've been saying for a lot of people, this yoga philosophy and spirituality. And the corporate world or the leadership world, there's a lot of contradictions there, right? Like lifting other people up. Well, then how do I get ahead? That sort of thing. And I talk about that a lot in my book, Awake Ethics. But I think spirituality really has two aspects that leaders, even in the corporate world, and leaders as leaders of our own lives can really adopt. And one is the thought of interconnectedness, right? So that everything is interconnected. And that's what we were talking about a few minutes ago with how our actions really have an impact on our immediate lives, but on our team members, on our organizations, and our organizations have an impact on the world. So if you're a leader that believes in that interconnectedness and you can see how your actions have an impact on others and eventually come back and impact you and impact the world, every action you take has a multidimensional impact, then that is one way of really being spiritual, because you will act in a way that's doing the most good, not only for yourself, but for all those other stakeholders that are being impacted by your action. And then the second is the thought of surrender. So the thought, the belief in like a higher power, you know, whether it's the universe or just a larger force, I think more and more people are opening to the idea that there is really a larger universal force out there, whether you're religious and have a name for that or not, the need to surrender, especially right now with what we're going through in the world, the idea of surrender is really real. And I think a lot of leaders in the past weren't as great at surrendering. They were very attached to their ways and to results and outcomes, and had a tight grip around control, right, of their organizations and the outcomes and how things happened in the world. But I think more and more leaders are realizing that they really do need to practice non-attachment and surrender to this more universal source. And that sounds really high level when you're thinking, oh, well, how do I practice surrender at my desk every day in a corporation, in my job, in a business? But there's small acts of surrender that leaders take. Like, for example, when a team member leaves and takes a new position at another company, some leaders are very attached and they say, oh, why are you leaving? It gets so upset. Others realize it as, you know, an opportunity. Maybe they got a better job and they need to move on. And this is an opportunity for us to find an even better fit, or someone else new that we can bring into our team and teach and grow as well. Other acts of surrender, like allow or non-attachment as well, like allowing a team member to take on a project or more responsibility without micromanaging them. And then there are larger acts of surrender, like what we're, you know, going through right now with the coronavirus, which is, you know, making many large and small corporations sort of surrender to a larger unknown and adapt and practice non-attachment in their ways of doing things and just believe and have hope that we're going to get through this. So I think those two beliefs, one in the interconnectedness of all things and all actions, and second, the belief in a larger universal source and the practice of surrender, are two things that spiritual leaders really practice. And I think more leaders at all levels are starting to really open up to and embody in their actions.
I wanted to take a quick break and remind you that it is never too late to make a choice and decide to make lasting changes in your life and create the life you want and learn to live life on purpose. At Your Wellness Yogi and the Living Life on Purpose community, we are dedicated to helping you discover that spark in life. We offer a variety of life coaching packages that meet your needs and budget. We have group coaching, monthly mindfulness mastermind calls, and one-to-one coaching. Get started today and take advantage of our two free personal one-to-one coaching conversations by taking the Circle Life Quiz, our free life assessment tool that helps you reveal the big picture of your true dreams and paves the road for a real personalized action plan to take control of your life. Visit yourwellnessyogi.com/life.
Oh, I agree with you completely, because whenever I'm trying to get something done in my life with my work and it's not going the way I want it to, and I keep fighting against it, whether I'm teaching yoga and it's at a location that's really not in line with me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what, this isn't really the right fit, but oh, I want that, you know, $75 a class that they're offering me, and I fight for it, and I keep pushing against it. It never works out. And eventually either I end up quitting the yoga studio, or the yoga studio fires me because they don't like who I am as a person, because it's just not, we're just not in harmony. But whenever I listen to the universe and I go with the flow, it's not that I don't have goals. It's not that I don't have dreams. It's not that I don't work hard. But when I listen to what the universe is saying I should do, everything works out so much easier. Whether it's interviewing a guest on my podcast or working on my coaching business, when I don't push and I go with the flow, I always am more successful. But the problem I think people have is, how can they learn to listen?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of times when we're caught in the day-to-day actions of, you know, answer these emails, get to this quota, all the sort of goals we have and the regular actions that we're used to, our listening or our awareness turns off, because a lot of times we feel the urge to rush. There's a lot of urgency, especially that happens, I think, in people's day-to-day work and in our daily lives. So I have had to practice a lot over the last 10 years, actually slowing down. And yoga has helped me to do that. And not slowing down, like, you know, taking an hour to proofread an email and thinking about it and all that kind of stuff, but just being more efficient by pausing and taking my time to do things well. That's one way. Another way of listening in terms of what you're talking about with like the signs or when is it right to act on something versus when is something being forced, I would say sitting back and using your intuition, actually being able to feel into the situation. And that actually comes a lot through the practice of yoga. People think that sounds a little bit weird until they've been practicing for a while. And then you can actually have a feeling of, oh, is this flowing? You know, if you're trying to get a new sale or a new account, is this flowing like they really need what I'm offering? Or does it feel forced and as though they don't really need it? And we're going down a path and spending time that's really kind of not efficient. And maybe this isn't even the right solution for them. And I should be focusing on this other person that's getting back to me and is really excited about what I'm offering. And, you know, it's a great energy exchange. They need what I'm offering and I like working with them. So I think it's both intuition and also slowing down a little bit and not being quite as reactive in terms of responses and sort of urgently rushing or moving through the motions of our day-to-day actions.
Yeah, it's this idea of like being overworked, overwhelmed, and overbooked all the time. And I find that to be successful in life, we need to find a balance between peace and productivity, or a balance between peace and progress.
Yes.
What do you think successful people should do in order to build those habits into their lives?
Yeah. So I talk a lot about the balance between peace and progress in that, in my book, Awake Ethics, the one on the yamas and niyamas, or the 10 ethical principles for leaders. And finding peace and progress is hard for a lot of people that go to work day to day and yes, have a very action oriented, you know, task oriented schedule and lead a very fast paced lives in dynamic companies. But I think finding that balance of peace and progress is really essential for not falling into burnout, for actually following a path and a career path that you want to follow and having the impact that you want to have. And I think most people are realizing that they need more peace at work, both inner peace and feeling less stressed and more centered every day, but also peace in their relationships with others at work. So in terms of those relationships with others at work and finding that peace, that's where in Awake Ethics, I talk about the yamas, right? Or our external, you know, actions with others and those ethical practices. The one I love to talk about is non-stealing. That's the second principle in the book. There's truthfulness and then non-stealing is a practice I talk about in the book. And some of the exercises I give for that in terms of finding more peace are giving positive acknowledgement to other people, giving opportunities to other people, and giving acknowledgement and opportunities to others in order to receive. You know, when you lead by example and start those acts of peace in your organization, rather than, you know, thinking about, oh, why am I not getting acknowledgement? Or, oh, why am I not getting the promotion or the opportunity to do a project? If you lead by example and start giving those opportunities and acknowledgement. Acknowledgement is something that even if you're not a leader of a team, you can acknowledge others at a meeting or send positive acknowledgement or thanks to others in an email. If you start leading by example and embodying those actions that really represent peace, right, and better relationships, you'll be surprised how others start to be like, oh, I want to have a little of what they're having. That's a really nice thing to do. And that's, you know, cultivating a much nicer culture than one that's only focused on progress or productivity or competition. And other people will start following and doing that back to you and others on the team. So yeah, the first four chapters of that book are focused on some of those more peaceful actions you can take to cultivate a culture that really embodies peace, but also embodies and values progress.
Right. It's, we can be spiritual. Mm-hmm. We can live a healthy, balanced life. Mm-hmm. And we can also be productive, hardworking individuals.
Right.
The hard part is finding that combination. And it can be very challenging for people. And, you know, I've listened to you talk, and how many books have you written?
I've written two books. So my first book is called Awake Leadership, and that's really what started my company. It's seven vitals for leaders, and it's based off the chakra system, actually, not just because it's a system that starts with a foundation, which is vision, and then you move up to higher vitals, and the last one is freedom. Great. So that's, yes. So that's sort of a jumpstart leadership, mainly for new leaders. It's a very action-oriented approach to stepping into a leadership position. How do I align my team? How do I delegate? How do I motivate my team? You know, if I'm stepping into a leadership position tomorrow or next week. But seasoned leaders use it as well. And then the second book, which I've mentioned, is Awake Ethics, which is a little bit more of a personal growth, professional development book that's obviously ethical principles for leaders. So those are my two books.
And guys, we have the links to them. So if you want to check out her books, you can totally check out her books. We're running up on about 40 minutes of a great conversation. I really want to ask you one final really good question that is one of your expertise that you focus on, and that is mindfulness and leadership practices. It's a buzzword that people talk about all the time now. I go into corporations and speak on mindfulness, and people are really interested in it. And what I want you to talk about is your five mindful leadership practices and how to step out from behind the screen.
Oh, yes, that one.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite ones as well. Mindfulness is very important for leaders. And that article that I wrote has been very successful because I think a lot of leaders are looking for ways to be more mindful at work, but also to teach their teams to be more mindful as well and cultivate that culture that balances both peace and progress. So the first practice that I'll talk about, which is one of my favorites, is reflecting on your wins and wisdom from the week. That's an exercise from my book, Awake Ethics, actually, the contentment section. So each Friday, I do this myself as an entrepreneur and a team of one right now. Every Friday morning, I open up my journal. And for my daily journaling that morning, I take anywhere from 20 minutes to 30 minutes or an hour. And I reflect on three of my main wins from the week. How did I make progress this week in any way? It can be a big milestone I achieved, or it can even be a great conversation I had. It can be that I got great feedback on something that I did. So I reflect on three wins. And then I also write down three pieces of wisdom or three learnings from that week. So I learned how to use a new technology tool or system, or I learned something from someone else, one of the contractors or one of the people that I'm working with. So this act of journaling really daily, but especially on Fridays, and writing down your wins and wisdom in a journal is a way to step away from the screen and with a paper and pen actually focus and write down your wins and wisdom from the week and generate some gratitude and positivity. So that's one. Another is to set your goals. So before the start of the next week, on Sunday afternoon, sit down with a paper and pen. Again, you don't have to be at a screen to do this, and plan out your week. I've been talking with a lot of leaders about this, especially recently, that are transitioning to leading remotely or working from home. Sunday afternoons, especially becoming a leader of a team or working more independently, it's really important on Sunday afternoons to look at your week ahead and set your goals, look at when your meetings are, and plan breaks. So plan your schedule and plan your goals for the week. And that doesn't have to be done at a screen. Another one is to conduct team meetings in person. And I know right now this year, that's a little difficult to do, but that is one thing that I've suggested in the past, you know, when we were in offices, it's to conduct your team meetings in one-on-ones in person. But I would add to that right now, as a practice for self-care, practicing meditation. So even though we're having a lot of our meetings on the screen right now using Zoom or whatever you use to have your team meetings and one-on-one meetings, I think it's really important more now than ever for leaders to actually practice meditation for 20 minutes a day. Plan that into one of your breaks, practice breath, just practice letting go and letting your thoughts settle. And that's meditation is actually a great transition if you're working from home for transitioning from work to personal time in the evening and really quieting your mind and making that transition. And then a final one that is still relevant now is to take a break for mindful movement. Movement is so important. And I like to say movement and not exercise, because exercise does have that feeling of results or productivity that comes along with it. And movement can be anything from taking a mindful meditation walk, taking a walk with a partner, doing some light yoga, really any type of movement, which also can be exercise. But moving your body really just gets energy going, but also stills your mind, as we know from the yoga practice. So of course, yoga is my favorite form of mindful movement, but that's a way to step away from the screen and actually generate new focus and clarity and energy. So yeah, those are some of my mindful practices.
Hillary, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate you and all the work. And we have all your information that we're going to link up in the show notes. And I hope everyone, including you, stays healthy, happy, and finds life on purpose.
Thanks so much, Michael. I really enjoyed talking with you today.
Thank you for listening to the Living Life on Purpose podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe to our show in iTunes and write us a review. By writing us a review, you will help raise our profile so more people can find us on iTunes. Links to our sponsors and other tools can be found in our show notes, along with other useful information. For more information on our yoga and coaching classes, please visit our website at yourwellnessyogi.com and please sign up for our newsletter. Life is short. Learn to live it on purpose.